So I don't have any slides this morning, but I do have a visual aid, and it is my shoes. I don't know if you can all see my shoes. That's as high as I can go. For the past couple of months, I've been going to the YMCA most Wednesday nights to play basketball. The players are a group of women that range in age from 18 or 19, which is actually quite intimidating, to my age-ish. And our level of skill, experience, fitness, and competitiveness varies widely. It's great exercise, and it's a ton of fun. Before I started playing with this group a couple of months ago, I hadn't really played basketball since I was in high school. And I will do that math for you. It had been roughly 36 years since I had played basketball. So when I started playing again recently, the basic elements were very familiar: running, dribbling, passing, shooting, rebounding, etc. But they were rusty. I realized pretty quickly, in addition to the fact that I was terribly out of shape, that I would need to tweak my old skills a little bit, adjusting how I played to allow for the fact that I was playing with different teammates, that there were different expectations, and that, most importantly, and probably, if I'm honest, really the only thing that matters, I have a different body now than I had 36 years ago. But regardless of the reasons, adjustments were required. Sometimes we have to do that, right? Make changes to our ways of doing things that have been familiar for years because we find ourselves in a different context, whether due simply to the passing of time or the acquiring of new information or exposure to different ideas, etc. As one very simple example, all people used to do all of their shopping in person. Today, many of us do much of our shopping online. As another example, remember way back years and years ago when meetings, including worship services, used to only take place in person, when everybody was gathered in the same room. And now, can you say Zoom? Obviously, I could go on and on and on with examples of changes that have taken place in the world as time has marched on, as we humans have learned new things, as former ways of doing things have become outdated and no longer useful, as we've outgrown our understandings and sometimes our beliefs. We simply do not stay forever locked into the same ideas, the same knowledge, the same practices. It's not the nature of life. To be alive is to grow and change. In fact, you're probably familiar with a quote from the Greek philosopher Heraclitus from 535 BC, who said, supposedly, change is the only constant in life. And now some people add taxes and death. But change is the only constant in life. We all know that, but it doesn't mean that we like it. But we do know that to live is to change. It's when change ceases that death begins. So what does this have to do with our gospel text for today? Before we get there, I have one more detour. For the past 4 months or so, a group of us have gathered here and via Zoom most Tuesday mornings. And we've been discussing this book called How the Bible Actually Works, with the subtitle, in which I explain how an ancient, ambiguous, and diverse book leads us to wisdom rather than answers, and why that's great news. It's written by Dr. Peter Enns, who, among other qualifications, has a PhD from Harvard in Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations, is a professor of biblical studies at a university in Pennsylvania and is a member of the Institute of Biblical Research, among other things. In other words, when it comes to biblical scholarship, he knows his stuff. So the main message of this book is that as people of faith, it is our sacred responsibility to seek wisdom in both the understanding and the living out of our faith. And by that, Dr. Enns means that it's our sacred responsibility. It's not optional. It's our responsibility to do our best to understand who God is and how and where and in whom God is at work in the world, in the context in which we find ourselves. And that seems to be the key piece, in the context in which we find ourselves. And if you are doubtful of my analysis, you can, I think, confirm that with Jennifer and Selma after worship this morning. And Dr. Enns gives example after example after example of first how the Hebrews throughout the Old Testament, and then both the pre- and post-resurrection followers of Jesus throughout the New Testament did this themselves. Throughout the Bible, both the Jewish and then the Christian understanding of who God was and how and where and in whom God was at work changed. And it kept changing. That is not to say that God changed. That's not to say that God changed. But based on their context and what was happening in their lives and in the world around them, first the Jews and then both the early disciples of Jesus and the post-resurrection followers of Christ had to reimagine who God was and reinterpret how and where and in whom God was at work. Time and time again, according to Dr. Enns, they reimagined and reinterpreted, allowing their faith to remain relevant and meaningful. I wonder if Dr. Enns might say that Heraclitus' notion that change is the only constant holds true not only for life, but for faith, and would perhaps suggest a slight modification of that ancient quote, making it instead, change is the only constant in faith. Okay, well, maybe he would change it to say God is the only constant in faith. But I wonder if he would go on to add, but change in our understanding of who God is and how and where God is at work is a distant second. But it is absolutely another constant. Living as people of faith must include a willingness to change our understanding of our faith, to consider new ways of understanding who God is and how and where and in whom God is at work, based on the context in which we find ourselves. When that willingness to change stops, that's when our faith stops growing and death begins to come. So now, finally, briefly, to our gospel passage. And believe it or not, that was a long passage, but I want you to hear even a little bit more. Because when I started the passage this morning at verse 10 of chapter 15, it left out what Jesus was responding to in those first 10 verses. So I want you to hear the first 9 verses of chapter 15. Try and summon the courage and energy to listen again. I'm going to read verses 1 through 28, this whole passage, a few little modifications for length. But as I read, I invite you to consider the three main players in this passage, not counting Jesus, but first the Pharisees and the scribes, then the disciples, and then the Canaanite woman. And it seems to me that they are all trying to figure out who God is in Jesus, what he's about, what he's doing, and who is this God that Jesus is claiming to represent. And so with that in mind, see if you can listen for a willingness to change their understanding of who God is and how and where and in whom God is at work. So here we go. This is from the verse 1. Then the Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem and said, "Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? They do not wash their hands before they eat." Jesus answered them, "Why do you break the commandment of God? For the sake of your tradition. For the sake of your tradition, you nullify the word of God, you hypocrites. Isaiah prophesied rightly when he said, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts as doctrines.'" And now this is where we began. He called the crowd to him and said to them, "Listen and understand. It is not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person." In other words, eating with dirty hands. "But it is what comes out of the mouth that defiles." Then the disciples approached him and said to him, "Do you know that the Pharisees took offense at what you said?" He answered, "Leave them alone. They are blind guides of the blind. And if one blind person guides another, both will fall into a pit." Peter said to him, "Explain this to us." Then he said, "Do you not see that whatever goes into the mouth enters the stomach and goes out into the sewer? But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart, and that is what defiles." Jesus left that place and went away to the district of Tyre and Sidon. Just then a Canaanite woman from that region came out and started shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But he did not answer her at all. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she keeps shouting at us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." He answered, "It's not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table." Then Jesus answered her, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And her daughter was healed from that moment. So we're going to start with the Pharisees and the scribes. And we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt, which they may or may not deserve. But we're going to practice being generous. Let's allow the possibility that they might have been trying to figure out if God, as they knew God, was present and at work in Jesus. And if God was working through Jesus, then how? How was God at work in him? Because Jesus seemed to be breaking the law left and right, flagrantly violating so much of what they held dear, so much of what they had learned was the right way to do things, so much of what was comfortable and familiar to them. And in fact, what they understood that God had commanded them to do for thousands of years. Does it seem in this passage that these particular Pharisees and scribes were willing to consider a new understanding of who God was and how and where and in whom God was at work? Not really. In fact, they seem much more interested in holding on to what was familiar, in clinging to what was comfortable, in keeping God locked in the box that they had made for God. Do they seem at all willing to consider new ways of understanding who God was, where and in whom God was at work, based on the context in which they found themselves? I would say, in a word, no. What about the disciples? The long and the short of their understanding at this point seems to simply be a state of confusion, an ongoing state of confusion. They did seem willing to change their understanding of who God was and willing to consider a new way of understanding how and where and in whom God was at work, but they needed help getting there. They seemed at least willing to open the lid of the box that the Pharisees and scribes had put God in and peek inside. Their one word, if I had to choose, would be, maybe. And what about the Canaanite woman? She knew that she was an outsider. She seemed to recognize that that meant that she and her daughter were outside the reach of Jesus and his healing power. And yet, she seemed to believe in a God that was bigger than that. She seemed to not only be willing to consider a different understanding of who the Jewish God was and how and where and in whom that God was at work, but she found the capacity within herself and in her faith to act on that understanding. to claim the truth and power of that understanding. This woman, this foreigner, this outsider seemed to know somehow that the time and place were right for no longer clinging to the Pharisees' no, for not only allowing the disciples maybe, but for recognizing a new understanding of who God was and how and where and in whom God was at work. And she boldly and courageously embodied, if we had to pick a word, yes. The Pharisees and the scribes tried hard, it seems to me, to keep God in a box of their making, a familiar, comfortable, manageable box. Could they reimagine and reinterpret, as their ancestors had done, God and their faith from within the context they found themselves? No. The disciples were at least willing to crack open the lid of that box and peek inside. Were they willing to reimagine and reinterpret God and their faith from within their context? Maybe. The Canaanite woman blew that box wide open and let God out, letting go of ideas about God that were no longer useful and that kept God small. She embraced new beliefs that pointed to an expanded way of understanding who God was and how and where and in whom God was at work. Could she reimagine and reinterpret God and her faith in the context of her situation? Yes. So where do we see ourselves within those characters, in our context, here and now? Are we like the Pharisees, clinging to old ways of understanding who God is because they're comfortable and familiar, even if they're a little outdated? Maybe some of them are no longer useful. Are we invested in keeping God in a box so that we can tell ourselves that God is more manageable? Are we like the disciples, willing to consider the possibility of new ideas about God and about where and how and in whom God is at work, but pretty confused about how to get there? Are we like the Canaanite woman, embracing and embodying new and expansive ideas about God and our faith, and acting from and living from within a place of courageous yes? I suspect we're each a little bit of all of those people, all of those things. My prayer, however, is that we would move more and more toward the yes, considering how we might let God out of whatever box we tend to want to keep God in, opening ourselves to more expansive understandings of how and where and in whom God is at work. My prayer for each of us and all of us is that we become more and more willing to change so that our spirits might be more and more fully alive. Amen.